swells in between them too, and temperatures near normal around 6 to 8 Celsius. Now into the weekend, it looks like there'll be a tale of two halves. Saturday mainly dry and bright with some sunny spells, but it'll continue to become windy, especially in the west and the southwest of the UK, with rain arriving across Northern Ireland and western Scotland later in the day. And into Sunday, it looks like it'll be even windier, with gales developing for all, especially in the west, as a band of rain moves into the west of the UK.
Thank you, Staff. Well, now we continue this week's Book of the Week, The Last Asylum by the historian Barbara Taylor. In the late 1980s, during a period of many years of severe mental illness, the author was admitted on three occasions to Frean Hospital, or, as it was originally known, Coney Hatch Lunatic Asylum. The once great Victorian institution was due to close and remained the focus of reports detailing the appalling conditions and callous treatment endured by some of its patients. But it was also a refuge and a home for those who needed it. The reader is Maggie Steed.
Frean was a tough place to live, much tougher for some than for others. I am an educated white woman from a middle-class background. The people around me were nearly all undereducated and poor. About a third of them were black. I may have been on the skids mentally, but I had far greater economic resources and cultural capital than most of my fellow patients. These things mattered. Madness can be a real social equalizer, turning a banker into a homeless bum, or a psychiatrist, as in Rajat's case, into a long-term asylum dweller. Among the severely mentally ill, class lines blur, but they seldom vanish entirely. The few middle-class patients of my ward would often sit together. People with posh accents were occasionally teased or even threatened. But it was money that was the real divider. I had never thought of myself as wealthy. Affluent, certainly, but far from rich. But here in Frean, surrounded by people grinding along on state benefits, for whom a lost gyro or a stolen bus pass was a disaster, I learned just how hugely privileged I was. I thought I knew everything about extreme anxiety until I witnessed the agonies of a man at risk of losing his home because of a mix-up in his social care payments. Poverty is a psychological catastrophe. Doing psychoanalysis from Frean felt oddly right, as if my circumstances had finally fallen into line with my wretched psyche. At first I was too ill to go. Boozing and starving had wreaked havoc with my system. My muscles ached like hell. I was weak and nauseous. And anyway, why should I go to see V? He had got me into this mess. He was the enemy. Dr. D would look after me. To hell with V. This lasted 5 days. On the sixth morning, I took a cab from the hospital to West Hampstead. After that, I went to all my sessions, travelling by train from the little suburban station just outside the hospital. Cradled in Frean's unyielding embrace, I found myself surviving emotions that out in the world had felt unendurable, so excruciating that I had had to drink or drug them away. I went to my sessions sober, and I stayed sober after them. Even after I left Frean, I mostly stayed sober, as I took myself off to the Whittington Day Hospital and later to the Pine Street Day Centre. Like Frean, these day institutions were places to lodge feelings that, if left stranded, homeless, would surely obliterate me and everyone around me. Some memories never lose their potency. They live on in the heartbeat, the muscles, the breath. In the weeks before I entered Frean, I had felt such memories pressing on me and fought them with every self-destructive weapon I had to hand. Better boozy oblivion than the horrors of helpless infancy. Now, Safeguarded and sober, the feelings were pushing through, eroding my grandiosity. My ego empire was beginning to crack, leaving me shaking with fear and despair. The worst feeling in the world was how V described this naked defenselessness to me. People will do almost anything to avoid feeling it. Why did I keep on with my analysis? I spat the question at V repeatedly. You have different reasons at different times. What reasons? Well, to get revenge on your parents. To get revenge on me, their current representative. Yes, I have heard this so many times. It doesn't mean anything. And because you're waiting for a miracle. A miracle? This is more interesting. Is he offering? Maybe there's something he can do for me that he hasn't done yet. Yes, the miracle that will make you the baby your mother really wanted. The sort of baby she could really love. So that she would look after you properly. Oh, that miracle. Why is there never anything new? And sometimes it's because you want to know the truth. The truth? What truth? About what happened to you. I know what happened to me. Do you? Do I? I had long been a friendship snob, priding myself on the cleverness and sophistication of my social network. Now, for day-to-day companionship, I had only the hospital. The prospect frightened me. How lonely was I going to be? You need people around you, V had said to me some months before I was hospitalized. But surely he hadn't meant loonies. Like me, came the startling thought. I met Fiona on my third day in Frion. She was only in her 20s, but she was a veteran of asylum life. Seeing me fumbling my way around the ward, she decided to take me in hand. Our friendship, which blossomed quickly, transformed my experience of the hospital to the point where at moments I almost found myself enjoying my peculiar new life. I could never figure out what was wrong with Fiona. She was a freelance designer who seemed to do well at her work, but every few years she would go funny and end up in hospital. We spent most afternoons together, chatting in the day room or strolling around the grounds. We collected windfalls in the hospital's overgrown apple orchards, ate strawberries on my bed until the nurse told us off. Small pleasures that in an asylum become survival stratagems. I met Magda a few days after my second admission. Hi, you don't know me, but I know you. Who was she? Not a doctor or nurse, maybe a social worker. You and Fiona, you were always chatting to each other. I used to lie there, she gestured to a bed, listening to you. I know all about you. I looked at her, at the bed. Her hair was dark and springy. She had an educated American accent. Was this the blanketed body curled up there, day after day? Magda laughed. I know, that's me. But I'm feeling great today. Magda has been in Frion for 21 years. Her daughter's birth in 1960 precipitated a catastrophic breakdown from which she briefly recovered, only to go under again. The cycle of illness and recovery recurred with dwindling recovery phases until eventually she ended up on Ward 16, where she is now a fixture. She is deeply, irremediably psychotic, with the most extreme form of what used to be called manic depression, and is now known as bipolar disorder. When I leave Frion, Magda warns me that if she ever turns up at my door, I must not let her in. I hurt the people I care for, she says, meaning it. The need for companionship is a human universal, but it takes many forms. When I first came to Frion, I was very irritated by the constant begging for cigarettes. Since I didn't smoke, It was a while before I realized these were sometimes social overtures. By my second admission, I was a smoker too, and beggars now would occasionally sit next to me while they puffed on a fag I had given to them. For people with severe mental disorders, just being around other people is sometimes all that is desired or tolerable. Company without intimacy is how the psychiatric literature describes this, and it seems apt. Intimacy is demanding. It pulls hard on our inner resources and threatens our emotional control. Even slight friendships can be taxing, exposing need and vulnerability. For some people, this pressure can be too much to handle, at least some of the time. This was quite often true of me, when I was too paralyzed by pain to reach out to anyone, yet could not stand to be alone. So I would join the smokers in the day room, placing myself next to Magda if she were there. Magda would glance over at me and sit on quietly. Once she took my hand. Beyond the hospital lay a network of psychiatric facilities, day hospitals, day centers, social clubs, where old friends could meet up and new friendships be formed. By 1990, when I was living in the psychiatric hostel and attending Pine Street Day Center, I knew this network well. I had plenty of chums inside it, and like the rest of its regulars, I relied on it for daily companionship. Today, the day hospitals and day centers have mostly closed, usually in the face of anguished protest. When I ask mental health managers about this, I am repeatedly told that it is not good for service users to spend all their time with other service users. They should mingle with healthy people in the community. It is pointed out to me that many people are unwell only intermittently, and what they really need is help in utilizing their capabilities during their well times, instead of becoming career mental patients, consigned to psychiatric ghettos. There is real force to this argument, and when I repeat it to a service user activist, he strongly endorses it. But it is also a convenient argument, legitimizing yet more swinging cuts in mental health budgets, and one that leaves untouched the miserable isolation of many mentally ill people in the UK today, sitting alone in their flats with only a television to keep them company. One man who spends his day like this, sitting by himself in front of the telly, told an interviewer, "It's just like being on the ward again, except there's nobody else there." I interviewed Janet Aldred, who was a charge nurse at Frean and one of the people responsible for rehousing the hospital's long-stay patients. "We made a big effort to keep friends together," Janet told me. "Some of the group homes we set up, there are people in them who have been friends for decades." But there had been a problem. People had been transferred at different rates, with the most socially able going first. So the less able people, the ones who had difficulty making friends, they got left behind, which must have been very sad for some of them. One of the less able patients was Magda. Ward 16 wasn't meant to contain any long stayers, but in fact it housed several who had been there for many years. "We're the real vets," Magda told me. "They'll never get rid of us." "So what will happen when the hospital closes down?" "We'll hide out. And when everybody else is gone, we'll take it over."
Maggie Steed was reading from The Last Asylum by Barbara Taylor. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. BBC Radio 4. Now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Friday the 21st of February. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North at Zero, Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Biscay, Fitzroy, Sole, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. New low expected North Fitzroy 1007 by 1800 Friday. Low Faroes 965, slow moving with little change. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at zero. Southerly, 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8, rain or squally showers, moderate or good. South at zero, southerly 5 to 7, squally showers, moderate or good.